In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast for the sort of, not historical, but traditional Stage 19 transition stage where every single ruler in the peloton tries to get in the breakaway. I don't know. I can't remember who won it in 2021. Maybe it was. I think it was Moritz in 2021 because he was in a group with like Erviti or Pollitt. And yeah, was it Sturven? And then last year, stage, I can't remember, there was another one of these breakaways, huge break. And so we knew it was coming because it was really hilly. The sprinters teams got exposed yesterday on the actual easy sprint stage, so there's no way they're controlling this one. 173 Ks from Morin en Montagne to Poligny, and it's got, you know, over 2,000 meters elevation, just up and down all day on these horrible, draggy climbs. The last climb is the Ivory Coat, 2.3 Ks at 6.2%, but it's actually 5 kilometers at near enough 5%. The categorization begins halfway up this climb, which belies how difficult it actually is. And then from there, the crest of that is about 29 kilometers to the finish, which is up and down a little bit, but again, not too difficult, mostly flat, straight roads. Tired peloton, Benji. And, you know, after yesterday, to me, it was like, and everyone finally wanted to get in the breakaway because literally every team was jumping, including UAE, including Jumbo. There wasn't a single team not jumping, I don't think.
Exactly. And also important, Alpecin as well, trying to jump into breakaways with multiple riders. At first, it was more that they were following attacks, but towards the later phase of the break formation, they tried making breakaways themselves. And there was so much attacks, like for like 50 kilometers. I swear the break formed with 120 kilometers to go roughly, and this is after 50 kilometers of racing. Every time I looked at the TV, I still saw the same view, people attacking, and the same people, the same teams. And Pedersen was very active in the break formation phase. We saw loads of riders, even Laporte trying to get in the breakaway, but eventually a group of eight got separation. Thijs Benoot, Matteo Trentin, Julien Alaphilippe, Jack Haig, Mats Pedersen, Zimmermann, Barguil, Campenaerts. When I saw that, I was like, quite a few teams missed out, but this is a really strong breakaway. So I thought, it's likely that this breakaway could actually sustain till the finish line. And then we saw people chasing. Israel, who missed it. UNOX, who missed it. And I don't think Alpecin started chasing at that
point. No, EF a little bit with Uran were chasing. I don't know who for. Because I Court was in G3.
Do you reckon that was a good idea from UNOX and Israel at that point? Because you're in a lost position, right? You can either give up completely or keep riding. What's your take?
Yeah, it's like, for EF, I didn't really understand it because I didn't know with Cord in G3 who they were going to try win the stage with. Yeah. I guess Bediol in theory, but his win probability to spend your team like that, to me, it didn't seem worth it. Maybe Cord was in G2. For Israel, I get it. Like, you missed it. If you don't chase, ideally you'd want to be in it, but you're not going to get a better result if you don't chase, and you're not going to win the sprint on the Champs-Élysées, and you probably don't have a good enough climber unless Nylens is flying for tomorrow. And then UNOX, I feel like they didn't need to. UNOX were way too active today, I think. Took on too much responsibility in groups where, why is it their responsibility to chase a break that Alpecin missed with the green jersey and with top three, top two classics rider in the world, Vanderpool? Why is it on UNOX? They have Alpecin, have Roulers too. They have Søren Kragh Andersen.
Yep. They should have been in that breakaway in the first place, of course. But if you don't get in it, then you got to make the decision whether you give up and let others do it or whether you chase yourself. And eventually, them chasing, with Israel chasing, it ended up having a positive effect for them, though, despite it not looking good at the first moment. Because they kept chasing and the gap stayed on 1 minute 10, even went to 1 minute at a certain point, 1 minute 10 again, staying around that mark. And one rider in that breakaway, Niels Pollitt, he was in there. He's got that phase of everybody calls him like a shark because he got his teeth out all the time, but that's Nibali's nickname, so get out, my friend. Anyway, he was in that breakaway, and he has the living moment of Tour de France Unchained. As in, he looks down, because I think his chain had dropped, and then he tries to get it back on, but in doing so, he pedals, and he basically breaks his chain into pieces. And you see it, like, hang behind his bike. He steps off his bike. He's got that mechanical. And let's talk about the Shimano event for a second, because the Shimano neutral service car, a service car that is in the race for, to help out, that is not your team car, because the Bora team car was not there, right? The Shimano car was there. So what do you reckon? Does a Shimano car have every single pedal type? Probably not size.
I think they gave him initially the right size, wrong pedals. And then the next bike they gave him was right pedals, Shimano pedals, I think, and wrong size. It was like, it looked like a child's bike on Niels Pollitt. So I don't know. They gave him like three bikes, but yeah, because the gap was like, didn't really get steadily to 90 seconds. I don't think they let the cars through. So he was gone. He was out of the breakaway. I think there was one moment we glossed over, which was there was a split on the fast ascent where Pedersen and Lutsenko were ahead. Yeah. And Adam Yates was off the back after that in a split with UAE, caught napping. And
again,
you could say, why don't Ineos go to the front, pin it for Rodriguez? Yeah, you could say that. Like, it's a gift. But brake formation, the fight for that was kind of keeping the gap open anyway. But yeah, it's something to bear in mind for Ineos tomorrow. We'll talk about it for the preview of tomorrow's stage. Like, surely Ineos must try something. Because UAE and Yates, I swear, Yates has been split off the back in brake formation and asleep.
Mate.
Half the stages.
It's a drinking game at this point. Genuinely, if I had drunk in the last 20 days, every time that Yates is off the back, I'd still be pissed at the moment. Anyway, we were in the breakaway phase there. Pollitt had his puncture. And not only did that chain break him when it comes to his ability in the breakaway, because he can't come back from that. The peloton's a minute behind, then three bikes, then getting his own team car. Eventually, that's not happening again. But it also broke the breakaway, because the breakaway, one guy less, bit of a motivation lacking as a consequence, maybe. Maybe that hit the mental side of the break, but the gap started going down from a minute to 50 seconds, to 40 seconds, to 32-ish seconds, and then I was like, this ain't happening. And did we see other teams starting to chase behind, or did the same teams close it?
To me, it looked like the peloton got to the intermediate sprint.
Yeah.
NVDP did a lead out for Philipsen, and they used the intermediate sprint as a launch point. And a lot of teams, I think, expected it or saw it coming. And basically, it just completely exploded behind again with, if you see Philipsen and NVDP going and you have a teammate in the break ahead, you have to be represented in their counter move if you're Christophe Laporte, which he was. And so it basically all-out attack started again. And, Laporte was up there. Even though he has Benoit ahead, Tom Pidcock was smartly filtering into that move. Mads Pedersen was all over it. Even Groenewegen was there because he went for the IS. And so also Fred Wright and Moritz were there because they had Haig already ahead. And finally, Israel, they didn't miss out, nor did Uno X, who were on the front. And so we basically have this split. I don't know if it was Alaphilippe that opened it. No, sorry, he was in the group ahead. I don't know who opened it, but huge split again. And the group ahead, I think almost every rider in the group ahead had a teammate chasing behind, except for Pedersen, Campenaerts, Barguil, Trentin, and Zimmermann. And so Benoit stopped pulling. Alaphilippe stopped pulling. Haig stopped pulling. And then it's like, well, we're not going to just pull these guys along. And so they basically just allowed that group to come back over because Uno X were riding like they had the stage favorite in that group, Benji. I don't know who was, because they didn't top 10 this stage, by the way.
So basically they have four riders there. I think Charmik was included. I think Tiller was included, Wadenschold and Abrahamsen, I think. Four riders in the group. And I think they were trying to keep it together for certain Wadenschold and maybe Tiller for the late attacks. But every single time an attack comes, even the first time around at the intermediate sprint, for example, they're not in that, they are in that response there, but then afterwards they go to the breakaway. And like you say, they come into a chasing position again. And they don't respond the second attacks come again. So every single time an attack comes, they're chasing instead of trying to get ahead of themselves, anticipating by, for example, a move that came later. Like you said, the Kampenaerts Clark move. If they're in there, they don't need to chase. Then it's all the other teams that need to chase. And that would have been a very advantageous move for them, because now they're chasing again. They're burning through two domestiques trying to chase down Kampenaerts, or should we call him Krampenaerts? Well, last time it was Krampenaerts, but now he's delivering it.
Why is it on them? Christophe Laporte's a favourite for the stage. He's got Benoit in the group. Philipsen's a favourite for the stage. He's got Van der Poel in the group. Bettiol had, I don't know, maybe he didn't have a teammate. I think he did, actually. Bahrain got three. Like, why is it on Uno X to chase this down? I don't understand. I guess they just took it upon themselves.
Yeah, I don't think it is necessarily on them. I think they put it upon themselves because they missed a split again. And that's a decision by the team. I wouldn't necessarily do it.
You just stop for 30 seconds. Yeah. Someone else will come. Because like, this is not at the final yet. This is not where group syndrome takes over. We haven't reached the final climb yet. And Intermarché back in the peloton chased initially. I didn't really know why, because ideally you'd want numbers, but Zimmermann's won a Dauphiné stage. Zimmermann was in the last six riders in the GC group on Col de la Loze.
Yeah.
Last six riders. Like, to me, it wasn't worth chasing, and they actually eventually pulled the pin because they weren't making a cross. So Jumbo just shut it down. They finished whenever. Forget about the peloton. And so we're coming up to this climb. Clark and Kampenaerts have a nice advantage, but we see there's a little roller before the Cat 3, and there we can see why the other maybe bigger teams were bluffing, because Kampenaerts and Clark lost 12 seconds on this speed bump. It went from 50 to 38 before the climb even started when Charmig was pacing. And I was like, okay, the other guys in this group realized that Kampenaerts has been in the break yesterday. He's been in the early break today. He's cooked. They're losing too much on the climbs. Clark, they get to that climb. Clark gets cramps, contagious from Kampenaerts. He's out. And now, to me, it was very obvious what was going to happen. Bahrain had three in the first 12 riders entering the climb. Haig had been in the early break. And so he wasn't going to probably go. And he's probably better for marking moves. It was very obvious to me that Wright or Moritz was going to go. And Wright just won British National Championships on a hellish course. Either him or Moritz were going to tag onto a move. And I thought, if you're not in good position, which Benoit and Laporte weren't initially, Pidcock was not initially, to mark those, or whoever else they tag onto, that could be the move.
Exactly. And this happened just as Simon Clark was being caught. Maybe that was an indication to the group there. Okay, there's only one rider still ahead. We can bridge to him. Maybe we can still work with that person. And Kasper Asgreen, the companion of Kampenaerts yesterday, he decided to launch the move. Mohorez jumped on the wheel. Ben O'Connor also jumped on the wheel. They were the three companions. And I feel like, I'm not talking about this moment, but I feel like we've had moments in this race where I have expected Van der Poel to respond, and then he responds kind of later when the group is already formed. Also in the early breakaway formation, but also at this moment, I feel like there was a move a bit later by Van der Poel in the descent to get away at Laporte, for example. And I think it's more that he can't respond at that moment, because I feel like he's just a few percentages under what he wants to be.
Yeah, plus with some curious decisions at times, but you're right. Like, you'd think if Pidcock and Van der Poel, like, Asgreen just won the stage yesterday. Moritz won San Remo, and he's won Tour de France stages multiple. He's like, this is what he does. I don't have the statistics in front of me, but to me, a group with Moritz and Asgreen going on the last climb in the last 35 minutes of a hard race, the success rate of that group is going to be really high. And if you miss it and you're with Pedersen and Philipsen and whoever and other people not cooperating, you know it's going to be a mess behind. So I was, you know, this is where if Benoit had the legs, I don't think he did, he needs to be in there. Nalens needs to be in there. Pidcock needs to be in there. But Asgreen's time was good, and maybe people, they caught them by surprise, and O'Connor had the legs, and, you know, he can worry about what to do later. But it was, I think there was a lot of bluffing in that group, Benji, because the gap went to 23 seconds on the climb, and then suddenly, like, Laporte was attacking, Pedersen's pulling really strongly, the gap is down to 17, 15 seconds, and this was like classic Group 2 syndrome. I thought, by the way, no chance Group 1 ever being caught, ever being caught. They got Moto in front, O'Connor's going to pull full, because top three in the stage is fine. Because, like, you know, it's probably the best result they can hope for. And Moritz and Asgreen are going to pull, and they're really aero. Asgreen was an absolute truck yesterday. And as well, like you mentioned, like, we didn't see MVDP just get on the front for Philipsen and close this gap shut, or Benoit for Laporte. In fact, it was Philipsen and Laporte themselves doing that work.
Exactly. We had moves by Dozwiders and Pedersen as well. So it's kind of like up to the sprinters that if you get over the Poggio in Sanremo, for example, we always talk about the group dynamic there. If you have teammates to still close down an attacker like Moritz in the descent, that type of stuff. It kind of felt like that type of scenario where the sprinters had to start working, because I think Van der Poel just didn't have it to be able to help full on. There were moments where he was skipping turns, and I feel like it was more because he had to than because he wanted to skip turns. I feel like he straight up needed to recover. And we've seen that group cooperation between the rest of the riders, but there's always one rider that every relay skips a turn. And when you see that, there's also something in these people's mind like, okay, I've got Philipsen in the group. I see that Van der Poel's now taking a skip turn. I feel like Mezgec is also skipping a turn at this point. I'm like, okay, my name is Alberto Bettiol. I might as well ride at 90% or 85% instead of 100% because I'm getting roasted by these guys that are skipping turns anyway if I make it to the front in any way. So that combination, that effect is also what keeps the group behind. And at first, the gap was closing, right? It went down to 16 seconds, 15 seconds, but then it started evaporating again. And it's partially because the group collaborates at the end, but before that, it was always attacks, eh? Always three riders getting ahead, three riders there. And while those three riders did have temporarily a motorbike, because there was also a motorbike there for a bit, it didn't matter because, like, those three riders against three riders up front are going to then fall back towards the other riders that are trying to get back, and then three other riders will try, and eventually they work together, but it's not going to happen, eh?
They got into the valley, yeah, and this was a huge advantage for the group ahead. Everyone just goes crazy in the valley when they initially get off the descent. Laporte goes, Van der Poel's with him, and initially doesn't pull, and says no. And I thought, I mean, you can play the Philipsen card behind you if you're group one, but you've tagged him now. You have the group ahead. You've taken it down to 15 seconds. Surely the play is to get across with him, and then you can sit on it at the end and play Philipsen behind. And then he does start pulling with him, but by that time, Pedersen's closed it. And then Laporte goes again, and Philipsen closes it. And Philipsen was super strong, like he showed in Roubaix. He had those same legs today. He was incredibly strong, and Pedersen was incredibly strong. He just needed a teammate with him in the breakaway, and they just cannibalized each other. All these really, really strong guys, Philipsen, Pedersen, Laporte, Bettiol, they just couldn't get it together. And so once that phase ended, and as you said, they start working together, they've just spent 15 minutes attacking each other. Group one has spent 15 minutes riding at a steady state tempo. And so, the gap just balloons. It goes out to 35 seconds. And that was it. And so now I was wondering, they're never going to catch them. What does O'Connor do now? And I thought, will he stop at 5Ks? Will he stop at 2Ks? I thought, like, once he's told it's 35 seconds, they're not closing that in 3-4 kilometers. And he just never stopped pulling, Benji.
Exactly. Like, the last moment that he should stop pulling for me is roughly with 2, 1.5K to go. Because then you still have a range to recover before making an early move. Because if it goes to a sprint, O'Connor is losing this. Asgreen is probably one of the favorites on paper if it goes from a regular sprint with both at the same length from the finish line, but Mohoric is not too far after, if I had to predict before the sprint started. And with O'Connor keeping up the pace, the break was definitely going to make it, but he's also limiting his own chances here. And, well, his attack didn't come at 2 kilometers, didn't come at 1.5 kilometers, didn't come at 1 kilometer. And I was thinking, is he actually going to attack now? Because it's becoming late. Because if you attack at 500 meters to go, for example, you're basically doing a lead out.
Yeah.
If people are directly on your wheel. And what happens in the following 100 meters is we do see his move. We do see an attack by him with roughly 500 meters to go, 550 maybe. And he makes that attack. And I'm thinking, Asgreen waited a second before he snapped towards his wheel. So there was a tiny gap, but Asgreen was still somewhat benefiting from the draft of O'Connor, definitely, at that point. But Moritz was straight up on the wheel of Asgreen. So Mohoric is getting the best draft advantage in that scenario. And with Asgreen closing the rider ahead, O'Connor, then Asgreen only has one decision he can still make. Just sprint for 400 meters until the line. And I know he can do long sprints, but that's pretty long.
Yeah, like this is where the only way for O'Connor to win the stage is to stop really early, hope Mohoric doesn't trust his sprint.
Yeah.
Asgreen closes, Mohoric, you counter, they look at each other. Only way you can win. And this is what happened to Mohoric. Mohoric was put in that position where the only way I think Mohoric can win is how it happened. A head-to-head 200-meter sprint, even with Asgreen starting in front, he wins. I don't think Mohoric can come around him or even draw level. But a 400-meter sprint in the wind the whole time for Asgreen with Mohoric literally glued to his back wheel, now he's got a chance. And that's what happened. Mohoric coming out of his wheel late, and it still wasn't a sure run thing. Asgreen was still ahead, but he bike throws too late. Mohoric times it perfectly. Asgreen was actually crumpled up, not fully extended yet, and just 30 centimeters after the line, his wheel is back ahead again, but Mohoric timed it perfectly. He in these situations, that's why he's won so many big races. And he always says afterwards, I'm not Van der Poel, I'm not Van Aert, I'm not Pogacar, I'm not Vingegaard. What he means by that is, he doesn't have their sprint. He doesn't even have their two-minute punch. But he wins these races because he puts himself in this situation. He tags Asgreen on the right climb. He works together. He's aerodynamic. He plays it cool, not closing O'Connor. Plays everything right. Bike throws right. And wins his third Tour de France stage. He obviously also has good watts, but that's what he means when he says that.
Exactly. But when the finish line was crossed, the speaker started shouting Asgreen. The tour tracker started saying, Mohoric, you are the man with the magical eyes when it comes to finish lines. I want your honest opinion here. I trust you, Mr. Rouge. Who did you think won the second after the finish?
The second after the finish?
Or did you, weren't you sure?
Hard to tell.
I thought it was Asgreen.
I thought it was, I didn't really have a strong view on it, actually. Luke just texted saying it was Mohoric on Tissot. I thought maybe Asgreen, but yeah, what a win from him. Bahrain's third win of the Tour de France. They just keep winning breakaway stages ahead of Asgreen. O'Connor third. That's still a good result for AG2R. Philipsen fourth again. And Pedersen fifth, Laporte sixth, Mezger seventh, Bettiol eighth, Trenton ninth, Peacock tenth. And yeah, UNOX not rewarded for all their hard work.
Yeah, it's when you miss every move instead of being in every move, then this is a result you get as well, because this is a stage that is won by anticipation and being in moves and not by being a chasing team behind. Exactly. And that's what Mohoric did, for example. That's what Asgreen did. They waited until the moment that they found was a good choice to go, and they went. And O'Connor, same situation. He went there. So I can only applaud those teams that were in Asgreen, were Mohoric, were in O'Connor for doing that. Then again, you know, ex-domestiques, strong work today. Let that be clear.
Yeah, yeah. But I would have saved Charmig.
Was the right choice.
I would have saved Charmig.
One thing, though, when it comes to these three riders, would you reckon if Asgreen would have won today that it would have saved Tour de France for Quickstep, right? The second stage win? It wouldn't have made them
I thought yesterday saved it.
Already? One stage?
Isn't that... Keep the streak going?
I don't know. I don't know what their quick step thing.
Yeah, I don't know what their objectives are. I mean, they won two in Denmark, right? So they probably want two. Not all stages are created equally. Yeah. I think you could trade at the stage yesterday and this might be wrong. Might be wrong. I think AG2R were very happy to win that stage that they won. The Col de la Low stage. I think that's a good stage to win. And what's another good stage? Mike Woods' one was pretty good on Puy de Dôme.
Yeah.
Like, there are stages and some are better than others. But
in the end?
At the end of the year, you just look at you say, two. Two is better than one.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't think the particular stage matters too much for the team's marketing side of it. But when it comes to well, for the marketing, it probably matters, but you know what I mean? The pretended marketing. Oh, we won 2 Tour de France stages, that kind of thing. But then again, if a rider wins a Tour de France stage, they can say they won a Tour de France stage, okay?
Yeah, and of course.
Philipsen comes a bit short in the second group. I will say, like, Philipsen's the best sprinter in the world. We have criticized his behavior in the race, but I also really like how he's a racer next to a sprinter. And the way Groenewegen as well raced today, he tried to bridge groups and so forth. I like seeing that from sprinters. That's something different. Then it's similar to Guadalajara, Vuelta, that major echelon stage that was one of the fastest stages ever recorded in the Vuelta a few years ago, that Philippe Gilbert won ahead of Sam Bennett. Sam Bennett, that stage was also truly amazing to see him so offensive in that stage. So that's a banger of a stage, by the way. That's a stage you need to rewatch if you're a cycling fan. Guadalajara in the Vuelta 2019, I think.
Yeah,
but anyway,
stage 17.
That was a masterpiece. Anyway, today was a classics day in Tour de France.
It was, finally, because I feel like the classics guys and even the punchers haven't really, it hasn't really been the Tour de France for them. Like, Stuyven keeps getting in breakaway. Like, Stuyven, by the way, how many breakaways Stuyven got in? And then today he's not in the breakaway he can win. You know, Cavagna, it's always curious to me, like, the riders that have tried to get in these breakaways that don't suit them. And I'm like, you got to save. That's what I thought Court might be doing. You got to save for this stage that suit you a little bit more. Or Vanderpool, for example. Like, Vanderpool kept getting in these impossibly difficult breaks. And then he seemed cooked today.
Yeah, but when it comes to, well, Vanderpool, I agree. But when it comes to Pedersen, for example, would you reckon that he would have had a larger chance of winning with a tug buddy, for example, if a Kirsch was there? I think yes.
For sure. Or Stuyven.
Because it makes it so much more difficult if you're as a Pedersen alone, because he had to attack on the hill that Asgreen and so forth, and because he missed that move.
He was all over it.
He
attacked with Lutsenko at the start, solo, basically, because he was pulling. And then he's in the group, initial group of 7 or 8 that Pollitt had a mechanical out of, and he's doing a lot of the pulling. And then he's closing. Like, Pedersen was on one today. He just was isolated. But that's how it is. That is how it is. Moritz and Bahrain, perfect timing, and get the job done. And Asgreen was cool about it. Anyway, tomorrow's stage 20, from Belfort to Le Markstein. The ASO and probably all us fans would have hoped that GC was a little bit closer than it currently is amongst the top two for this stage. I mean, that's why they designed this and put it there instead of a TT or something. 134 kilometers long, and it's a very important stage for the KOM battle, for starters, because it has, first of all, a Category 2, Ballon d'Alsace, 11.5Ks, 5.3%, 5 points. Descent, then another Category 2, 5Ks, 7%, then another Category 2, 3Ks, 8% in the first 60Ks, then a Cat 3, the Col de la Schlucht, we're in the Alsace region, 4.2Ks, 5.1%, steady, easy descent before actually quite a hard climb. The Petit Ballon, 5.5Ks, 8.7%. We saw the combination of these two climbs in the Tour de France Femavec Swift last year where AVV went crazy. Check out the preview, by the way. We put it up yesterday on podcast players and YouTube for the Tour de France Femme starting on Sunday. But yeah, 9.3Ks, 8.1%. That's difficult. Descent straight into the Platz of Arsel, 7Ks, 8.3% with a 6K, 7K. Plateau on top, low altitude, high gradients. What's happening tomorrow, Benji?
Climber's breakaway on the first climb, I would say already. That's a breakaway formation climb. We've got it early on. The time before the climb is not big enough for there to be a true ruler breakaway up the road again. So climbers are probably going to wait for that climb to really, really try and form that breakaway. Maybe it forms with a proper gap, maybe not. I've got an interesting question for you. Because, like, Jumbo-Visma, obviously Vingegaard is now 7 minutes 35 ahead of Pogacar. He's 10 minutes 45 ahead of Adam Yates. What do you reckon? Because, like, if you're Jumbo-Visma and you see the stage, is there a risk with Vingegaard going for the stage? Because, like,
how does he win?
Well, he wins if Jumbo makes it hard and he attacks on the final climb. And then it depends on whether Pogacar is the same form as 3 days ago or not.
Nah, Pogacar will be better, I think, unless he's sick. It's not that hard.
It depends on that factor. And if they believe Pogacar indeed will be on the same level as he was week 1, week 2, then Pogacar is the favorite from the GC group. But otherwise, you might as well
go
with
it. Break.
What, sorry?
I thought Pogacar would try and get the breakaway.
I don't see Jumbo letting Pogacar in the breakaway at any point. Except because in the breakaway, I like it.
For sure. So that's what I think Jumbo should do. They got to put one of Kelderman or Kuss in the breakaway, preferably Kuss, with Benoit or Van Baarle or whoever. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think they should do. Probably Laporte would be a good one to go in the breakaway with Van Aert not here. So yeah, I think they put Kuss in the breakaway is what I would do. He's ninth in GC. So Gull will be in the breakaway. Back to KOM. Ciccone leads that competition by 6 points on Gull in second. I think AG2R will want to go for that and the stage with Gull. So he will try and get in the breakaway. Vingegaard's on 7 points behind him. I don't think Vingegaard's going to win it. And so you got all these cat twos and threes before the category ones with 5 points on offer. You know, Ciccone, he'll be in it with Trek. And he'll be in it with Schelmoser pulling. So I think the break on that initial first climb is going to really kick off there and be really, really hard. And because Gull will be in it, and on GC he's eighth, right? Then probably Gaudu and Martin will be in it. That's the rider ahead and the two riders behind Kuss. And then there's a gap, another 3 minutes to Hindley in seventh. I think Kuss got to get in the break.
The thing with Hindley being ahead of Gull means that if Gull's in the breakaway, then Bora's going to start riding behind, and you suddenly got a race that it's closer than if Gull was not in the breakaway. So that's going to be a curious one, how Hindley responds to that, whether he tries to follow
Gull, gets in himself,
or whether he actually tries to get a different situation like that. Because if Hindley goes in the break, then Bilbao will do it, and then Simon Yates will respond. Then at that point, we might end up with everybody in the break except for Pogacar and Vingegaard.
Maybe.
I'd love it.
Well, that kind of happened the other day where Hindley missed it.
Yeah.
And so he got leapfrogged and Kuss missed it. And so Yates, Bilbao, Gaudu profited. And so I think Hindley has to respond himself because his team looks weak. Buchmann got dropped in break formation today. Jungels doesn't look so good. I think he's got to respond himself. But yeah, Gull will jump in. And then I think Hindley responds, and I think we're going to see a lot of fighting from these guys in the lower end of the top 10 in GC, a lot of moving.
Do you reckon UAE will try and control the stage for Pogacar if they do believe he's back in Werfers and second week form? Because he said he wants to win today's stage, but do they have the confidence to put an entire stage of tempo in that? And that also makes the race a bit harder for Adam Yates, maybe, because he also wants to secure his podium, because they want both on the podium at this point. They're not trying to win anymore. They're trying to secure second and third now.
I think keeping Yates on the podium is actually above stage win in the priority list right now. I think they really want the two on the podium. And, you know, Ineos had a gift maybe today. Not really. Rodriguez is 1:15 behind Yates. Now, we've seen in the Vuelta on an easier stage than this in 2021, Lopez lost it all in 2021. And also Bernal was on the wrong end of that too. Yates also messed up the final, and that but they didn't tell him that he was not actually that far behind Hagen. Hagen ended up on the podium. So, Ineos have to try to get Rodriguez on the podium. Does it really matter if he finishes sixth instead of fourth? Does it really?
I think they might be scared to lose fourth and therefore not go for third all out. Because, like, what are they going to do? Are they going to try and launch him to a satellite rider with roughly 80K to go on the Col de Gospierre? Because that's very early. Because then the climb afterwards is a rolling terrain climb. So that's where you'd like
somewhat of a domestique.
Because if you wait until Petit Ballon, then you probably can't take a minute and a half. So the only chance that you can gain that time on Adam Yates is if you go really early. But that's a huge risk.
Is it?
I think it is. I'd rather finish fourth and sixth.
But you attack, right? Adam Yates marks you. It doesn't work. Now what?
Well,
you still
maybe
get to finish the stage.
Guy that's behind you in GC?
Fucking no chance they will.
What do you mean? As in, if he goes into the attack and he gets caught on the last two climbs, then he's destined to get countered, eh?
Sure, yeah.
But
he's got a satellite rider. He's in the wheels.
Yeah. I would enjoy seeing it, but I don't think they have the balls for it.
Okay, Ineos got to try something. Yates has looked very suspect in break formation and early part of stages. UAE could be splitting their priorities between Pogačar stage win and Yates. I think there could be, I think, you know, a lot of their guys look tired today. Get Frehler in the break, get Pidcock in the break, get Castro in the break, get Fiato in the break, try and get some guys in the breakaway, do a lead out for Rodriguez on one of these middle climbs and just try something and try some chaos, because no one remembers fourth, but podium is legit. And I think, you know, there's a reason this stage is here. And I think there's some very tired people here. But yeah, listen, maybe that's not to say that fourth is a bad result for Rodriguez. That is a very, very good result. I'm just saying, if you're Ineos and you have a chance to go for the podium in your big organization, I would try something.
If I am Guillaume Martin, you know what I would do on this stage? We've seen a pattern with Godu the last 3 weeks. We see that in the early parts of the stage, he's getting destroyed, and then at the end, he's back.
Yeah.
So if you put your entire Cofidis team in making the first part of this race
first
as
climb
hard as possible,
Izaguirre
to drop Godu,
you should.
And then Guillaume Martin, Izaguirre go on an adventure in the breakaway, try and get as far as possible away from Godu to try and see if they can bridge that 5 minute gap. That is real ciclismo.
That is, yeah, that is ciclismo. I think Gala is going to go for KOM points, and it's going to cost him. And the climb is not as long as the other big climbs. Ciccone too. My pick for the stage is Chris Harper. He was in the last four from the breakaway on Col de Lowe's, very strong. I think he's going to get the freedom to go in that breakaway. Mm-hmm. Maybe with Yates trying to attack. I mean, Yates is less than 2 minutes behind his brother. Probably he won't attack him. I don't know, but okay. I pick Chris Harper for this from the break.
I'm doubting between two people: Tobias Holland Johannessen and Jörg Zimmermann. Zimmermann was good on Col de Lowe's. You mentioned him. Weird work here. I'm going to go for Johannessen because I feel like I want the riders at UNOX to get something out of this race after what they've been through today.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with Johannessen.
I think it's a good stage for him and maybe an easier stage for him to get in the breakaway if he picks the right move. But yeah, I'm keen to see what happens tomorrow. Maybe that's a bit of a damp squib. Like
Damp squib?
Yeah, I've even forgotten myself what that means. A situation or event which is much less impressive than expected.
Okay.
And so last year's Vuelta stage, which Carapaz won, where Ayuso should have won. It could be that one, I think. It could be that one. But we'll see. We'll see how it goes. Maybe it kicks off. Maybe Vingegaard loses GC with Pogačar coming back. Who knows? I doubt it. Maybe Pogačar wins the stage. 7.5 minutes. Who knows? But yeah, keen to watch a good break. Good break fight tomorrow between some good climbers. Maybe Clément Berthet gets up. I don't know. But I hope you enjoyed the podcast as always. We'll see you with the recap of the Alsace Medium Mountain Stage tomorrow. Until then, ciao.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.